Blog Talk Radio.
And let me ask you this. Do you think Jimmy is roaming around the White House tonight trying to find a meatloaf to warm himself up on?
I don't think the cod has eaten meatloaf.
Who the hell are they? They're only from Georgia. Oh, let me tell you something. I am so sick of Washington and all its works and all them politicians down there and them congressmen and the congressmen, boy. I'll bet you won't find none of them congressmen turning down their electric blankets tonight. Because if they did, their secretaries would get up and go home. Oh, Reedus, the Democrats is doing a whole... The Democrats, and you put them in there. That's the face you had on you when you come back in the polls. Well, the Democrats' way of running this country is to go tell us all how we ought to make sacrifices. God, they're great on that stuff. But they're all going to have us over the hill to the poorhouse. We ain't going to be able to drive over there because we ain't got no gas, so we're going to have to walk it.
Oh, the Reader's Digest says walking is very good for you.
Oh, ain't that lovely? The Reader's Digest can always put a little joy into poverty. Listen, my whole point is this whole thing with the energy and everything. This is all a conspiracy. Don't you know that? It's a conspiracy there. Listen, for years, all our lives, they've been telling us to go out and buy stuff that use energy. You know, all electrical stuff. Like electric toasters, electric ovens, electric stove. Electric stereo, electric TV, electric race, electric hair blower, electric knives, electric every damn thing. Not to mention the cars. And now, after all the big corporations there make the billions and billions of dollars worth of profits, signals, wham, they're changed. And after telling us for years that we can't live without this junk, now they tell us that we gotta live without it. The country is going straight into the dumper.
Okay, that's the opening today. Archie Bunker talking about the D.C. Democrats and energy crisis from the old Archie Bunker TV show of the 60s and 70s. You're here listening to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Ann Ubellis. I want to welcome you aboard. We do have a guest today. His name is Craig Miller. He is running for U.S. Senate in Florida, and I expect him to be calling in shortly. We do have a caller in on the line, and let me bring this person in. And if this will click, there we go. Good afternoon, area code 407. This is your host, Ann Ubellis. Who am I speaking to?
That's right. Hey, this is Craig Miller. Did I call in on the right number?
Yes, you did, Craig. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. I'm actually en route from Boca Raton back up to Central Florida, but I stopped to talk to you, so I'm in a permanent place. So very nice to be with you guys today.
All right, we've got our co-host, Cool Mike, on the line also. How are you doing this afternoon, Mike?
I am doing great. Thank you to Mr. Miller for joining us as well. Really appreciate it, and I am extremely excited. I am en route somewhere, too, and I know my friend on the who's thriving is extremely excited. So thank you very much for joining us, Mr. Senator.
We can cross our fingers and hope. Now, I noticed that the field was pretty wide at the start of this campaign. It's narrowed itself down to just four of you, correct?
Yes, there's four candidates that are considered, I guess, the top-tier candidates in the race. You know, there's a lot of differences between some of the candidates in terms of their backgrounds, but the biggest difference for me is I'm the only businessman, I'm the only war veteran, I'm the only job creator in the race. I'm going up against mostly career politicians and a former reserve military officer. So people are going to have certainly going to have a choice of the type of senator they'd like to represent the state of Florida.
Yeah, can you give us a little bit of your background? Because I see that you served in the Air Force in Vietnam at the time of the war.
I did. When I got out of high school, I had been working in restaurants as a young teenager, and then volunteered and went into the United States Air Force right out of high school. I thought I'd see the world, and they sent me to an Air Force base about 30 miles from my home, so that didn't work out very well. but I then volunteered and went over to Southeast Asia, was stationed at Tamron Bay Air Force Base, in 1969, you know, during the Vietnam War.
Well, we want to thank you very much for your service to our country. We greatly, greatly appreciate that one. There was a recent poll out showing that you've got 58% of the voters right now in Florida that are undecided. That's a pretty large swath of people.
Well, you know, it's a late primary. It doesn't primary doesn't come until next August. Actually, only a few days before the Republican convention, which is held down in Tampa. But you know, Florida is looking for a different type of representation. I believe we have a 40-year career politician and Bill Nelson, very liberal senator, voted with Barack Obama and the socialist agenda that's been promulgated on our country for the last few years. And they're looking for someone new. I'm the last person to get in the race. I got in about 3 months ago. And I'm the only person that doesn't have a career politician around my name. So it is a wide open race. It gives me a lot of optimism, though, that once people get to know me, get to know the type of a career I've had and the type of life's experiences, that that I'll be the choice for the people of the state of Florida.
Mike, you got any questions?
I got like 300 million zillion questions.
I've got a yellow pad all scribbled up.
How about 14 trillion dollars worth of questions?
First question I have, I'm in the car with my friend Greg. He's been my best friend for many, many years. He's a teacher. We're both basically conservative Republicans all our life. What the hell is going on with the GOP? It is almost as if so many have turned against the middle class and are just – it seems like so many of them have become socialists. They don't – the Constitution,
you know,
I noticed on your page, you're a big constitutionalist. And Annie, myself, and my friend Greg are – What happened?
Well, you know, I think it's the type of people that we've been electing to represent us, like more than anything else. You know, you look at the backgrounds of a lot of the people that are representing us in Congress and the United States Senate. Many of them are lawyers, predominantly. A majority of them are lawyers. You know, lawyers approach things a little bit differently than Main Street people do or business people do. You know, they kind of enjoy crisis. They look at the world differently. They like to legislate. They like to regulate. They like to create laws. You know, business people avoid a crisis every chance we get. You know, we keep our heads down. We work hard. We try to make the customers that come into our businesses satisfied so that they'll return again. And I think a lot of it has to do with the type of people that we've been elected. And many people representing us today are truly have spent their entire lives running for public office, one after office after another. You know, so when it comes down to is they're not representing the people that elect them, they're representing themselves in a lot of cases. And I think that, you know, there are some Republicans that fall into that same category. I think if you look at the type of people that were elected in 2010, specifically in the U.S. Congress, that you will find some examples of some new breed of elected officials that come from different backgrounds and different perspectives that I think are going to turn this country around. And I think it's the type of leaders we've been electing. You know, many of them, you know, just don't come from Main Street. They never signed the front of the check. They never hired anybody. They never dealt with some of the regulations and heavy tax burden that that faces the American people. And so they're out of touch with what's really going on Main Street.
How would you look at, let's say, a teacher, for example, in Florida who's in Dade County, and they say to you, Mr. Why should I vote for you? Why should I not vote for your opposition? And also, on following in on that, what are you going to say if you get the nomination when the party kind of pulls you over towards where the party is right now? How do you address that?
Well, you know, you want to be able to get things done. I can appreciate in some respects, you know, the fact that, you know, that people need to figure out how to work together. On the other hand, what we lack in Washington so much is champions that are principled and that they have enough credibility in what they're talking about, and they're just not representing lobbyists and special interest groups. And that's where I think the big difference is from somebody like myself. You know, I'm not running for the United States Senate for a new career. I spent 40 years in the business world. I don't need to be, looking for another career. I'm looking just like I did when I was 18 to serve the American people. I consider myself a citizen statesman, not a career politician. So if you're, depending on what your motivation is to be there in the first place, it gives you the ability to stand up to pressures from either side, that might want you to compromise in some way. But what's lacking is the knowledge and the base of understanding. And knowledge creates credibility and your ability to actually get the way, get your philosophy over to people. And I just believe that, when you compare my life's experiences to those that I'm running against, that the people are far going to look at it and say, here's a guy that's created over 40,000 jobs. He comes from a very humble background. My dad was orphaned when he was 8. My mom came from a sharecropper family in South Carolina. I grew up, from the dish room to the boardroom. And, if I can get that message out, people will help me financially. People will get behind me. And I will separate myself very quickly from the other candidates that's in this race. And, I've been a successful business guy for a long time. I know how to get things done. And right now, most of the problems we have in Washington, we're not even working on the right problems, much less bringing the right solutions to solving those problems.
Well, Mr. Miller, I've read Herman Cain's 999 plan, and I do have a few problems with it. You're also for the fair tax. Have you looked at his 999 plan and see how he's trying to transition from the current system we have into the fair tax? Are you for something like that?
Well, first of all, you need to know that Herman and I have been friends for 25 years. He was running Godfathers when I was CEO of Pizzeria Uno, and I've always said I made better pizza than he did, but we're still arguing about that. I think the best thing that Herman's doing for our country right now and for this campaign, and the reason why his campaign is resonating, he's an out-of-the-box, forward-looking thinker. When you start drilling down to the details of the 999 plan, if you're a fair tax supporter as I am, you've got a bit of concern, that we would give our government two means of taxing us. But I applaud Herman for actually offering a solution, and there's a lot of work to be done to put the touches around any new dramatic change in our tax policy. But we have a tax system right now that is not consistent with the needs of the American future and the 21st century. And we need to throw that code out. We need to do away with the old way that we've taxed the American people. And we got to come up with a fair / flatter tax system that broadens the base, creates more taxpayers, but doesn't increase taxes. We also need a balanced budget amendment, and I think we need an amendment that caps the amount of federal G&P that can be taken, from the American people. Whatever that number is, there has to be a cap and a control over the fact that, we can't have a government that continues to grab, grab, grab. And we've had a federal government that's been over-promising and under-delivering for the American people now for decades. That's how we've ended up to be almost a dependent nation, not an independent nation anymore. And, when you're dependent on foreign money, you're dependent on foreign oil, you're dependent on, on some cases even, being able to get the kind of workers that you need to work in your country, you face the whole idea that we lose our liberty and we lose our ability to be independent thinkers. And we even raised a generation in some respects to be dependent on unemployment benefits and handouts and give-outs by the government. And that's not the America that offered me the opportunity that they did, 30 or 40 years ago. And I want a different place for my children and grandchildren than what I see right now.
Oh, that is absolutely correct. And it is not the same place that we saw back in the 60s and 70s. Another problem I'm seeing coming up, a lot of people are questioning now the 14th Amendment, whether or not it's constitutional, as well as the relationship between the federal government and the state, exactly what it should be. What's your take on that?
Well, I believe that the federal government should be smaller. I believe the federal government should have a hands-off, to anything that's not specifically outlined in the Constitution. I think most of the problems we have today come from the fact that the federal government's put their nose where it shouldn't be. I know many of our economic problems are that way because we don't know how to run the business of the American economy. We just don't know how to run the business of the American economy. Leave private enterprise, leave it to the people, leave it to the states you know, to monitor and control much of the things that the federal government has put itself in the middle of. And I believe we'll turn this country around, you know, extremely fast. So, you know, this is not something that we can't change or we can't turn around. We are going to have to elect different kind of leaders, in my opinion, if we're going to accomplish that.
All right. My mind is like in about 15 different places because there's so many good questions that we have out there to ask you. And a lot of people have been listening to this commercial that's been playing up. Let me play this commercial, and I'm going to ask you how you would respond to it.
Okay.
I'm not a number. I'm not a line item on a budget. And I'm definitely not a pushover. But I am a voter. So, Washington, before you even think about cutting my Medicare and Social Security benefits, here's a number you should remember. 50 million. We are 50 million seniors who earned our benefits. And you will be hearing from us today and on Election Day.
That sounds like an AARP commercial.
That's exactly what it is. Exactly. And the reason why I chose that one was because of the large retirement community you have in Florida.
Sure. Well, first of all, my mom is going to be 91 this year.
Oh, God bless.
She's, God bless her. Yeah, absolutely. And she like many seniors, have paid into a system that the American government and the American people promised that would be there for them. And I am not interested at all in toying or changing the type of system that was put in place by that generation to take care of the elderly today. But I'm also pragmatic enough and understand the process enough to know that if we don't modernize these programs and we don't change them and we don't adapt them for the future generations of our children and our grandchildren, that they will not be there for them. And in the meantime, we're going to destroy the economic future of our country if we can't get our spending under control. And if you can't address entitlement programs, Medicare, Medicaid, and health care, as well as Social Security, you're not going to be in a situation where you have the financial resources to have a booming competitive economy. So, you know, we need to get down to talking about the solutions associated with modernizing these programs so that we can get the future of our country established for, you know, the generations that are relying on us and not leave them burdened with enormous amount of debt. You can't spend $1.40 when you're only taking in another dollar. And, you know, we need to get on with figuring out how we're going to do that. But the last thing we should be doing is scaring the seniors or the veterans, for that matter, that their benefits are going to be, you know, be changed that have been promised to them over decades.
Yeah, one of the problems I have with the entitlements, now there's paid entitlements and there's unpaid entitlements. Paid entitlements being Social Security that we paid into, Medicare and so forth. The unpaid,
right.
The welfare and so on and so forth. My biggest complaint is people are double dipping. You know, there are state services and there are federal services. For example,
right.
One of the ones I love to use is schools now are providing 3 meals a day. But these very same people are getting food stamps to provide those very same 3 meals. So they're
right.
Getting free meals on one side, but they're also getting paid for the very same meals. Why can't we marry some of these programs on the federal and state level and just bring them all down to the state? Take the federal government out of it. What's your take on something like that?
Oh, I believe that would be a great solution to the problem. Get the federal government out of the giveaway handout mentality. And, you know, once that happens, you know, we'll be so far better off at that, you know, if we can get ourselves in a situation where, you know, bring the solutions down to where the problems are. And if we can do that, we can set ourselves up, you know, for a great future. But, you know, right now the government is so bloated. There's so many programs. Let me just give you a perfect example. I sit on the Homeless Commission down here in Central Florida. And, you know, the federal government has 33 agencies and departments that, as part of their responsibility, they deal with the concept of the idea of the homeless. That's just a perfect example of a bloated bureaucracy where departments and agencies are given responsibilities for things that they should have nothing to do with. Get the federal government out of the work of trying to take care of all of the American people and making them dependent on the federal government. It's a socialist way of life that just doesn't create the type of stimulus that our people need and the type of incentive people need to get out and get a job and actually be productive and contribute to the American economy.
I found that amazing. 33 different agencies for the homeless alone?
No, 33 different agencies have some role. They have some activity associated with trying to deal with the homeless.
And what's your take then on the federal government controlling education?
Well, again, you know, whether it's, you know, the economy, whether it's free enterprise, whether it's education, you know, whatever the federal government gets itself involved in, you know, that takes away the ability for the individual and the state to make things happen for the citizens, I think you slow the process down, you create a bloated bureaucracy, you increase the cost, and I don't think the end result changes, you know, and it certainly doesn't improve. In fact, in most cases, it becomes less effective. You know, so again, it's bigger government doesn't create better government. And I think that, that if we'll just change the attitudes we have and bring a different kind of people, you know, to the elected process in Washington, we can change the way, you know, our government runs. And as I said, we haven't set our government up. Our government has not been set up to be, you know, effective monitors of, you know, of the resources of the American people. And the best way to do that is to get out of the way and let the American entrepreneurial spirit, the hardworking people that have built this nation, you know, get unshackled from the limitations that are placed on them through heavy regulation and overtaxation.
Well, my co-host Mike seems to keep on dropping in and out. He's back again. Mike, do you have another question?
Yeah, I was going to say I really enjoy what I'm hearing so far. Okay, let me play a devil's advocate right here. Put before you right now is a yes or no answer, a couple of them. Would you have supported the bailouts, and would you vote yes or no to rescind the Patriot Act in full?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that last question. Right. Say that again.
Would you vote yes or no to rescind the Patriot Act as voted in such in 2001?
You know, that is a very, very tough yes and no question. Again, I'm not a politician, so I don't like politicians that skirt around the issue. You know, if I had been asked to vote for that in 2001, given where we stood at that time, I got to tell you, I would probably vote for it. You know, given the threats, you know, that our country faced from unknown terrorists around the world, now where we are today and not having the opportunity to have access to any of the intelligence data that establishes the, you know, the parameters that are necessary to make sure that our country is protected, you know, I am loath to say, you know, how I would vote. You know, I've talked to several Congress people here in Central Florida that faced the, you know, the vote on that bill within the last year or so. You know, some people that I thought would definitely vote against it voted for it. You know, anytime Big Brother or the government is looking over your shoulder and you look at the constitutionality of that act, you know, it certainly raises some very serious questions. So I hate to not, you know, be able to give you a yes or no. I can't promise you how I would vote on that if I was elected to the United States Senate. I have to be very honest with you, because I don't have all of the information that I think I would need to be able to judge, you know, exactly how that program has worked and whether it's being effective in terms of protecting the national security of our country.
All right, Mike, we got a caller in on the line. Area code 816, you're on the air live. Who am I speaking to?
Hey, Annie, this is Thomas.
Hi, Thomas. Mr. Miller, Thomas has a show of his own called The Invisible Conservative. What is your question, Thomas?
My question is this. Kind of disappointed me because I saw this, and I just want to get your thinking process, well, your thought process on it. On Facebook, an article came out. It was called The GOP Strategy to Reach More Hispanics, and essentially what article was alluding to in some commentary was that essentially for the most part the mainstream GOP has decided that they're going to focus less on the black vote because my community has voted 96 to 97% Democrat, so basically a lot of us towards the lost cause and focuses more on the Hispanic vote. And I want to know, if you're elected in Florida, what would you do differently to reach everybody? Because to me, that is most disappointing thing, and that is the only thing that has kept me from registering as a Republican. I'm a conservative, but I haven't registered since I left the Democratic plantation, if you will. I never registered as a Republican because I felt like I'm really not really welcome. So what would you do differently? That's my question.
Well, first of all, I think you'd only have to look at the background and where I come from, you know, to understand that people of different color or people of different nationalities, you know, we're all Americans. And
amen.
You know, some of us have a philosophy of conservatism. You know, some of us have a view, you know, that might be different. But I don't buy into the whole concept or idea that color or ethnicity should be, something that should have act how people feel, you know, about a political party or a philosophy. So, you know, I've been employing and working side by side with minorities all my life. My first job as a dishwasher, I was the minority because I worked in a kitchen with three African American women, Black Americans, when I was 13 years old. So,
wow.
When you serve in the military and you get exposed to people from all walks of life, you come to appreciation, you know, for the value and concept of the individual, and they all make great contributions to our society. So I would not buy into any strategy that would exclude any American that would be interested in supporting my campaign and where I come from.
Right.
You know, when you're a United States senator, you know, there's only 100 in that room, you know. So I think that the most important thing a United States senator can do is be philosophically principled, okay, but also make sure that they're representing the people that they're put there to represent, which is the make progress and success for all Americans.
I like that answer. And I just want to tell you just a quick story about a friend of mine up here in Missouri who ran for the 5th District U.S. House of Representatives against Emanuel. His name is Jacob Turk. He's a lot like you because I read a bit of your background. He was retired Marine, not like you, principals, and he was told, I can't remember if it was by the state or the national GOP office, directed not to go campaign in the Black neighborhoods of Kansas City because he didn't stand a chance. He told them, and I think this is where you're going, he told them, he said, you know what, if I am blessed to win this election, I want to be a representative of all people, not just the people in the suburbs. And so I appreciate your answer, and that just reminded me of what he said to me. And so I will be supporting you, and I will be sending in my little donation to your campaign, and keep up the good work. That's all I want.
Thanks, Tom, very much. And anyone that wants to help out my campaign, you can go to www.miller2012.com and help out with my campaign. I appreciate those comments, Tom.
Not a problem.
Thomas, thank you so very much. Matter of fact, I did put at the start of the chat room your website up there. I'm putting it back up again in case anyone missed it. It's miller2012.com. So it's back up in the chat room. It's also on the homepage for this show in the description, right after your quote that Michael put in there. Mike, you got another question. I know. I have about 40 here. I think we're losing Mike again. Okay.
I'm here. Go ahead, Annie. I'll jump in.
Okay.
It's your turn to talk, actually. I have to say, I really like the answers I'm hearing. I'm hearing the kind of answers that basically say, I'm a regular person like you and I, and I'm not going to lose focus when I get to Washington. I think that's really what we need in the Senate, since we made a move like that into the Congress. And I really like the fact that you believe in the Constitution. I think when we get away from the Constitution, way overboard is when we find the situation we're in now, sir.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I point to so many examples of how we make things worse for the American people, not better for the American people. And we have to get our arms around the fact, you know, that we have become so dependent of a nation. And, you know, we signed a declaration back in 1776 that broke us off and created a great independent nation, the United States. And we got to remember that when you become dependent on something else, all of a sudden, when you become dependent, you lose your independence and you lose your liberty. And we're doing it to the American people. We're doing it to our country. Every time we import another barrel of foreign oil and become more dependent on foreign energy, we lose a little bit of our independence. Every time we borrow and become dependent on foreign debt, we lose a little bit of our independence. And I want to go to Washington and turn that around. It doesn't have to be. We have all of the resources here in this country that we need. We do need to have a free trade attitude. You know, we need other countries to buy our goods, and we need to be able to have markets worldwide. But that doesn't mean that we don't lead. That just means that we create the right environment where we're the best competitive force in the world, and we're not doing that right now.
And one of my questions for you, Mr. Miller, was about developing energy. And you have an all-of-above approach. What do you mean by all-of-above?
Well, what I'm saying is that nothing should be left unused in terms of the energy resources that we have here in this country. You know, I would not be in favor of near-shore drilling. I come from a tourism state like Florida, tourism state of Florida. I'm a former tourism commissioner, so I have some sensitivity to our pristine beaches and our tourism industry. But when you get outside the view of our tourists and outside the view of the, you know, near term, if we can get out 50 or 75 miles, we should be drilling. We should be building natural gas pipelines. We could create literally multi-millions of jobs and save billions of dollars a year just by having a energy independence policy that says within the next decade, we're going to reduce our dependency on foreign oil and foreign energy by 50 or 60%. That alone is a double-barrel positive, not only for job creation, but for keeping our valuable assets here in this country.
Well, going on to a different, completely different track, I do have a question here. Now, we've had this debate here on our show and on other shows about the definition of marriage. And I always say marriage is a religious ceremony, so it should be up to whatever that religious affiliation is to define it. But if you want to talk about a legal union, one where, you know, you have to physically go to court to sue to get divorced, that should be called a civil union because now government controls it. What's your take?
Well, I believe marriage is defined, you know, as between a man and a woman. And I believe that that is the, you know, a critical foundation of our Judeo-Christian values here in this country. And I believe it's consistent with, you know, the foundation that got our country, you know, to be one of the best in the history of mankind. And, you know, the idea of civil unions clearly, you know, needs to be something that's left up to the people in their individual states. And I don't think the federal government should be involved in that process at all.
Well, what about according people in a civil union the same rights, for example, hospital visitation, rights of inheritance, custody of the children, so on and so forth?
Well, again, I don't see where it's the role of the federal government to be involved in that process. I believe that those decisions should be left up to the to the majority of the states. You know, as a member of the United States Senate, I would stand by that as something that, you know, the states need to be able to decide.
Okay, all right. My whole thing is, once government defines marriage, now you're stepping into a religion, and now you're no longer separating government and religion. Because then you, at that point, if you say marriage can be a gay union, now you're going to mandate a Catholic church to perform that union, or say, for example, an Islamic mosque, and you're going directly against those, that religious belief.
So, I would never be in favor of any form of government, federal or state, mandating on any religious entity, a definition that is inconsistent with the way those religious religions believe. And I think that's the separation that the Constitution protects, and we should not be mandating that to religious institutions.
All right, we got our caller Thomas with another question. Thomas, go ahead.
Hey, you actually brought up an interesting question because, from the pro-life movement, there was a big controversy with the answer that Herman Cain gave to Piers Morgan. And it kind of lines up with what you just said, because he said that he did not believe that the federal government had any right to mandate abortion, the abortion issue, like the Supreme Court did. And so what is your feeling on that controversy with Herman Cain? Because me personally, I read his transcripts, and he also put out another statement. To me, I understood what he was saying, but do you feel like it was just something that conservatives, sometimes we tend to look for the littlest things to nitpick each other about?
Well, I didn't have the opportunity to see Herman's television performance. I read that there was some question, or I actually got an email from Herman that he was trying to clarify what he thought people might have perceived that he said. I know, because I've known Herman for over 20 years. I said I know how pro-life he is. He's as pro-life as I am, and he comes from the same viewpoint that life starts at conception. And there are not situations where, any form of government should be involved in not protecting the right of the unborn. And, I know that it's a very divisive issue in this country, but philosophically, where I come from, I'm raised Roman Catholic. I've raised to believe that life begins at conception. And, it is the law of the land under Roe v. Wade, but from where I come from, I will always speak out on behalf of the unborn child.
And I appreciate that. See, I wish we had a candidate like you here in Missouri. Well, we do, but they're just running for a state. But I really appreciate listening to candidates like you, and I want to share this, and then I'll listen again. But people like you, it's the reason why you reflect, in my opinion, what the original intent of the GOP was founded on. Because I'm sure you know that the Republican Party was founded as the party that stood up for the rights of the slave and the free, newly freed slaves. And to me, you represent that kind of person. And like I said, I am going to do everything that I can in my power up here to help you. I really appreciate you. So
God bless you, Tom. Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. God bless you.
Going from abortion, Mr. Miller, you've had some statements you've made about stem cell research. And recently, England has completely outlawed embryonic stem cell research. What is your take?
I am not in favor of embryonic stem cell research. Again, I come, and stand on a very principled position, and that is that life begins at conception, and I would not be in favor of any type of legislation that would change that definition, from where I believe. And it is something that many people disagree and have differences of opinion on it. I can only tell you where I come from and the values that my parents left for me. And I have three children and a recent grandchild and a new grandchild on the way. And, you know, they are the future of our nation, and God gave those children the opportunity to, you know, to be on this earth, and they deserve every opportunity to life.
Oh, that I completely agree with you on. I want to remind everyone they are listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Ann Ubellis. We have our co-host, Cool Mike, on the line. Our guest is Craig Miller, a Florida businessman and restaurateur, who is running for Senate seat against Bill Nelson. Our call-in line is open, and it's 917-889-3675. We welcome your questions. And the chat room is open, so if you don't feel like calling, just type your question in the chat room. I will place it to Mr. Miller. Now, Mr. Miller, I have also now noticed that you made a public statement, because Florida has gambling. You know, you go down there, they have these little casinos all over the place. But they wanted to open up Internet gambling, and you're not exactly for that, are you?
I'm concerned about Internet gambling, and it mostly has to do with youth. You know, as someone that's been in the restaurant business all my life, you know, I recognize that, you know, that there is a role for state governments to control, certain social things, whether it's the legal age to drink or something as open as Internet gambling that could affect our youth. I am as much interested in the future of our younger generation as I am in anything that I'm doing. And I think we have to be very careful that, you know, we make sure that we don't create a situation where we exacerbate already major problem. And that is that our youth aren't be able to find work. Our youth have a lot of idle time. When I was 13, I was washing dishes in a restaurant in Rockledge, Florida. And from that experience came a lifetime of opportunity. And I want to see that same opportunity for my kids and my grandkids. So, I do know and recognize that there's a lot of Internet gambling that takes place. A lot of that is being done, illegally and internationally. But it's something that I support, the right for casinos and others to do gambling, but I think it needs to be in a controlled environment.
Okay. All right. As long as there's a control on it. Now, moving to a completely different subject, this past March, there was a judicial ruling in Florida. It was for the Islamic Education Center, and the old regime wanted to take it into U.S. court, where the new people in charge of it want to put it through Sharia law and have an Alim Muslim scholar make the determination. And this judge, a circuit court judge, Richard A. Nielsen, ruled that it should be held in Sharia law. Now, that is a huge.
just the concept and the idea that we would allow that, to be part of something that our judicial process would embrace, is beyond something that I could ever contemplate, being in support of. I mean, I think that, American laws for the American people, we have the best system in the world that's ever been created. And we don't need other countries or other mandates coming from outside of our own country, to tell us, how our judicial system is going to work and how you're going to face, the judicial process, here in the United States. And that cannot be delegated to any other entity other than the judicial system of the U.S., in my opinion.
Well, what do we do then with this judicial activism here, where they're making the law now rather than following the law or, judging based solely upon the law? How do we get these judges back in line?
The best way you can do that is elect Craig Miller to the United States Senate from Florida, and make sure that judicial appointments are done in such a way that we don't allow these activist judges to be to be approved to be on the bench. And it's probably one of many very, very important duties of the United States Senator, and that's to approve and the appointment of all federal and Supreme Court justices.
Well, would you be in favor of, say, for example, a constitutional amendment that states specifically that U.S. law is the law of the land and supersedes all others?
You know, I believe the Constitution already says that. The problem we have is the point that you make, and that is the activist judges, want to make, decrees from the bench that contradict the U.S. Constitution. I think that we need to be, make sure that we're fully aware of and fully cognizant of the difficulty in amending the Constitution. Many times we talk about, constitutional amendments when, if you just read the Constitution, it's very clear, where the judicial process lays and the role it has in the federal government. It's a lot has to do with making sure that we have the right kind of people on the bench, that are not going to be reading things into, to our Constitution and making activist decisions about, certain aspects of what goes on in America. And I think that the sensitivity that and the awareness of issues like this and the education of issues like this is probably the best way we can make sure that we don't get undermined. It's not unlike what's been going on with Agenda 21 and the work on and many of the activities of the United Nations that we need to be very, very cognizant and very educated on to make sure that we're not led down a path that is going to further erode the strength and the status of the America both domestically and worldwide.
Now, you brought up the question I was going to ask you next. You brought it up yourself because it led right in there. The UN 21. You want to explain what that is?
Sure. Well, it's a worldwide effort to try to force down into local and state governments, an acknowledgement of international law as compared to, the laws of our nation and the laws that control the actions of the American people. And it's really a whole concept, in my opinion, to try to create a worldwide order or a worldwide control. And it's something that we need to be extremely aware of. And I think it snuck up on a lot of people, and it snuck up on a lot of folks that had never heard of it up until maybe 18 or 24 months ago. The more you become aware of some of these initiatives and the objectives that this agenda has, the more you understand that we can't let this type of agenda gain any more of a foothold here in America. In fact, we need to make sure that we can turn around some of the initiatives that have already been started. Many communities have embraced some aspects of this agenda, and I think it threatens our independence, threatens our ability to always do what's first and foremost right for the American people.
Now, one of the things the UN's been trying to do is that small arms treaty that's supposed to come out next summer, where it would mandate universal gun registration, ammo registration, and just about anyone will have access to this registration, as well as restricting the type of ammunition and weapons that you can buy. Along with this, right now in Congress, there is a bill for a concealed carry permit, and the wording in the bill is troubling because if you're in a state that has a very liberal carry permit process, if you want to carry into another state, you have to abide by that stricter restriction. You understand what I'm saying?
Yep, I absolutely understand what you're saying.
What would you do?
Well, the Second Amendment is extraordinarily clear in terms of, the right for Americans to bear arms. And I'm a strong proponent of all aspects of the Constitution. It's the law of the land. And we have, of course, carry permits here in the state of Florida, and those citizens that choose to carry a weapon have the absolute legal right to do that. There's a couple of checks that are made to make sure that it doesn't fall in the hands of of felons or folks of that nature. But international law, does not trump the United States Constitution, nor should it. And we shouldn't allow that to gain a foothold, in our country, because it's a real slippery slope. And regardless of the issue, this one to me is as clear cut as it can get. The U.S. Constitution is crystal clear, in my opinion, on the Second Amendment, that protects the right to bear arms. So, to me, that movement should not be able to gain any status here in our country.
I sincerely hope that it doesn't. But the legislation that's currently going through Congress right now does disturb me. We do have states with reciprocity laws, but you have,
right.
Say, for example, a stricter gun carry permit, say, in New Jersey compared to South Carolina. But the way the law is written, it will impose New Jersey standards here in South Carolina.
Yeah, which should never happen. It should never happen. And I don't think the current makeup of the U.S. Congress, that bill will see the light of day. And I don't think certainly that it's gonna happen under the current Congress. And I'm very confident in 2012 we're gonna gain even more conservative, principled people elected to the U.S. Congress. And I think we're gonna retake control of the Senate and retire Harry Reid from his majority seat. And we're going to start working hard to get our economy working again and get people back to work and, return America to the status that it deserves to be, worldwide. And every day we see ourselves slipping, further behind, where we need to be as a country. And I think this is really going to be a decisive election in 2012. I think it's the reason why my friend Herman Cain's message is resonating and people are taking a hard look at Herman. Most people that, I supported Herman in January. I wrote him a check in January when he got into the race because he's been a friend of mine for a long time, and I know where Herman's coming from. And I haven't endorsed anybody, of course, in this race, but I knew right away that Herman would be a force in this campaign because his message is crystal clear. He comes, like I do, from Main Street, and he's talking to the people, and he's talking about we the people as compared to talking about some of the things that career politicians tend to do, and that is, vote for what's in their best interest as compared to what's in the best interest of the American people.
That is absolutely true. And matter of fact, your friend Herman Cain got himself in trouble the other day. When isn't he in trouble? Making a joke about electrifying the border fence. Now, Florida has a high number of immigrants in there, not just Cuban nationals fleeing Cuba, but you do have a large influx of immigrants. What would you do to make our nation more secure?
Well, there's several aspects of the immigration problem that we're not working on that we should be. Florida has a large percentage of immigrant population, as does other states like California and Texas. The folks that went through the process, and we do have a legal process on how you can become, a legal resident or a citizen of the United States. I'm a big proponent of legal immigration. I believe that we need to have, population growth. Right now, our population of our core American citizens, has been at a relatively low rate for about the last generation, I think 1.3. And, that's not the sustainable population growth that's going to keep us competitive worldwide. So my view on immigration is, A, if you've got laws, enforce them. And we have immigration, laws in this country. I do believe we need to change some of the legal immigration laws to make, for example, guest worker programs, more acceptable so that people can come here that want to. Work for a period of time and then go back. I think that's, something that, that would be not only helpful to our economy, but, Abraham Lincoln said, if you've got bad laws, enforce them and the people will change the laws. And, we do need to take control of our borders. We need to make sure that we know, the people that are here illegally. And if they're not here legally, they need to go back where they came from. And I'm a big proponent of what I call self-deportation. And that is you take away the benefits associated with being an American citizen from illegal immigrants or illegal aliens, that they will over a very short period of time go back to their homeland, because they're here for very simple reasons. They're here for opportunities, they're here for jobs, and they're here for the benefits of being an American or living in America. And as long as our government refuses to recognize that if they have laws that they don't enforce, it will cause an erosion of fundamental, law and order that keeps our country, strong and safe. And, that's why I'm a big proponent of mandatory E-Verify. And, to say someone like myself would be in favor of any type of mandate is a little unusual. But I understand that if you don't force every business owner, they're going to be responsible. Provide them a tool and make sure that everybody has to use the same set of tools and everybody plays by the same rules if you're going to control, this major problem we have in our country, of some 12 to 13 million illegal aliens in this country.
Well, one of the things I you brought up, which makes me do a little flashback memory, I'm a retired New York City police officer, and one of the things that drove me crazy is when you got someone in custody that was a known illegal immigrant, we weren't able to do anything. We weren't allowed to contact ICE or anything. This was under Giuliani when he was mayor. I'm talking about in the 80s, early 90s.
Right.
Now, I do have a problem with these sanctuary cities. Now, as senator, would you be voting then to remove funding for these sanctuary cities and states that would fail to enforce immigration?
First of all, the federal government needs to do what it should be doing. The whole concept that somebody can opt out, of federal law is not acceptable, in my opinion. You create a double standard, and it's not right. And you end up with a situation like we have, where you've got, an enormous number of people coming to this country because the consequences of them coming here, are zero, as someone that's, been hiring thousands of people during my career and trying to be as responsible a employer as I can, the frustration you had as a New York City police officer, I had as a business guy, a business person, because I would hire somebody, I'd find out that they were not legal, so I would terminate their employment, and they'd go across the street and get a job someplace else. Now, how is that fair? How is that fair to the business person, that's trying to do the right thing, this is just another example of where our government and a lack of leadership, doesn't tackle tough problems and deal with situations that will, force the right kind of behavior on this big group of people that have chosen to come here illegally. I think Herman says it very well. We have a process, go through the process. Do the things that you can do to improve the process. Make it easier for people that want to come to this country. But for goodness sakes, make sure that you're also enforcing the laws on the books.
Okay, that I completely agree with. But along with illegal immigration, now this was, I'm not sure if it was Newsweek or one of those magazines. This was prior to 9/11 terrorist attack. And I had been reading this magazine in a doctor's office. And they were talking about immigrants coming across the border that were illegal, but they were talking about a large section of what they called OTMs, other than Mexicans. And they were saying they were from Lebanon, Yemen, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and so on and so forth. What would your answer, with knowing what happened now because of that with 9/11, what would your answer be to the war on terror? Would you say it deserves a military response when they attack us domestically, or would that be a law enforcement response?
Well, clearly the war on terror is something that's real, and we are have to be extraordinarily diligent in everything we do to protect the American people about this terrible terrorist activity that's taking place around the world. I believe that it is a war. I believe that the military is the right place for to fight a war. When it comes to immigration policy and so forth, I think that the federal government needs to use the resources that it has. I think in some ways all American people, all states, and all individuals should be able to you know, to be part of the solution to this challenge and not, you know, not contribute to the problem. That's where when I hear things like sanctuary cities, you know, I'm dismayed because, you know, it turns a, you know, a blind eye and a deaf ear to, you know, to the problem. And it only makes the problem worse for all of us, you know, when you have, you know, activities like that going on. And I'm not an uncompassionate person at all, but I want to represent the American people and the citizens of our great nation when I get to the United States Senate. And I'm not going to support illegal activity. I'm not going to reinforce the illegal activity. And I'm not going to, you know, set us down a slippery slope that allows, you know, exceptions to the rule, because there's always can be exceptions, you know, to someone's interpretation of, you know, what's right and wrong. And our laws are pretty clear when it comes to how we deal with illegal immigrants. And you know, let's just get on with enforcing our own laws, because when these laws become real to these people, then the problem will be, you know, will be easier to solve.
Well, then how do we deal with something like President Obama has done now, where he's signed in as executive order this DREAM Act for kids that came here as children, went to school, now allowing them to go to college and apply for federal loans through this DREAM Act executive order he signed into law? How do we deal with that?
Well, it's another example, you know, of exactly what I'm talking about, and that is that, you know, we're not willing to enforce the laws that we have on the books. You know, I feel, I feel badly for, you know, for young people that have been in this country a long time, that if they've been here illegally, they're brought here illegally, you know, it undermines our laws and undermines, you know, and creates the, you know, the reality that, you know, that the behavior is going to continue and it's going to replicate itself. We didn't get where we are in 1 year or 2 years or 3 years. We got where we are, you know, based on what started in 1986. You know, and it's almost a generation now where we've not been willing to deal, you know, with our illegal immigration issue. Now it's a burden on many towns and cities. You know, we see what's happening along our southern border. And, you know, it just demonstrates that when, you know, when the rule of law isn't followed and supported, and much less when it's not supported by our elected officials, you know, it undermines, you know, the principles of right and wrong and the type of behavior that we expect, you know, from all American citizens.
Well, that's true. That's true. It's very disappointing, because if you look at what the cost of states just for medical, like hospitalization, welfare, and even coming up on Social Security and so forth, what it costs the state is in education dollars. Illegal immigration has taken a large, large burden on the states. And we got another caller coming in area code 816. You're live on the air. I'm your host, Annie. Who am I speaking to?
Annie, this is Thomas.
Thomas. Welcome back. You thought another question.
No, when I have one. I just love listening to the back and forth conversation, but I'll let you know.
Thomas he has his own show, like I mentioned, here on Blog Talk called Invisible Conservative. It's rather, rather good. Now, there was a questionnaire that went around in 2010 put out by Liberty Central that the candidates were filling out. And one question caught my eye on it, and I'm going to use this one on you if you don't mind. The question was, should Congress continue to use the General Welfare Clause, which is Article 1, Section 8, to regulate aspects of our lives, such as agriculture and education, that are traditionally under the authority of private sector, state, and local government? Now, I had asked you a similar question to this, but I found this one very interesting about the General Welfare Clause, which is often misinterpreted.
Well, I think, again, that's a liberal interpretation of that clause of the Constitution. I believe that, you know, that the best education, and let's talk about it from a practical standpoint. Let's talk about it from what's best for the children. And I believe that, you know, that education starts at the home, and education starts in the communities, and, you know, and states and local communities and the parents have the best chance of educating our children. And, you know, I don't believe that, you know, that the federal government, if it has any role in that, it should be a very limited and very small role. And it should not use its huge power of the federal government, you know, to create mandates and directives, you know, that undermine, you know, the educational system at the local level. You know, I'm going to have to cut this short. I think we're past the hour already, and I've got a you know, another appointment coming up. But it's great, been a great pleasure to chat with all of your folks today. And again, if you'd like to follow my campaign, you can go to Miller2012.com.
All right, Mr. Miller, it has been an absolute pleasure, and I wish you a lot of luck on your campaign, and I urge everyone to go to your site, which is Miller2012.com, and make a donation to help push your candidacy from fourth position all the way up to first, and then finally into the Senate.
Thanks very much. Appreciate talking to all of you today.
You have a great day. Okay, that was Craig Miller, who is running for Senate here in, not here in Florida, but in Florida. He's going up against Bill Nelson, who is a progressive liberal Democrat. So we need to help someone like Mr. Craig into the Senate in all 50 states. So go to his website, which is Miller2012, and make a donation if you can. I've lost my co-host, Cool Mike, it seems. His call dropped because he's driving between one spot and another. So I have to apologize for that. Hopefully Mike will be able to call back in. And I still have Thomas, the invisible conservative, on the line. Thomas, give me your take on Mr. Miller.
I like him.
Okay.
Good. He's a good guy. Rating. I pulled up his website, and let me put it like this: any man that likes Herman Cain is not bad in my book. And I know I may be showing a little bit of my bias there, but just listening to him and what he has to say. But it's, I like him, you know, just listening to what he had to say. I like what he, you know, what I heard about him. And like you said, we have to get him to the top and into the Senate.
Now, that I definitely agree. We need to help propel more conservatives like Craig Miller into the Senate. We got to make sure we have a solid lead in the House as well as the Senate. And then, next step, the White House. And that's
right.
Why we need someone like him, someone like Herman Cain, along that lines. I mean, I wish Newt Gingrich didn't have so much baggage on him, because if I can see
a ticket
with Herman Cain and Newt together, I think that's winnable. With the two of them.
He's going to be, if Herman Cain wins the election, he's going to be somewhere in the cabinet. I guarantee you that. Because if you think about, you've seen all the debates, right?
Correct. Yep.
Name the only person out of all the debates who have not attacked Herman Cain.
Well, the only one I know would be Newt.
Exactly.
The only one would be Newt. Yeah, but when he gives his answers, they're very directly to the point. And he doesn't go and attack any of his fellow Republicans. He follows the Ronald Reagan rule: thou shalt not speak evil of any other Republican, especially when you have a race like this going on. Because what's going to happen? The other side, President Obama's team, is watching this. And you know they're sitting somewhere in a dark room in front of their computers and splicing all these things together to use in commercials. Because whomever is going to be the nominee, those sound bites are going to be flashing on your TV every single time your whatever you're watching goes to a commercial.
Right. Exactly.
Now,
you know what? Let's do a segment called Making Fun of the Stupidity of Liberals. And first up, did you hear what Mr. Biden said the other day? I believe it was something along the lines of government jobs are more important than private sector jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Give me your liberal feed, or your, wait, you're not liberal. Oops. Give me your conservative feedback of a liberal faux pas, if you will.
Well, how about when they caught Joe Biden with the law enforcement group, and he's saying that Republicans were supporting rape, murder, and robbery, and so forth, because
won't pass the jobs bill.
His jobs bill. And by simply saying that we're going to cause. No, that's not true. That's not true in the least bit. You know, if you built up the private sector jobs, what's going to happen? Now you have more jobs in the private sector. You have more taxes going into the municipalities. You have more taxes going to the municipalities. Now you can hire more police and firefighters, right? Because that's where
that's how it works.
Paychecks are coming from. It's coming from the tax base. So unless you increase that tax base, you're not going to be able to increase your law enforcement and your first responders.
And you know the interesting thing about it, there was a girl who was raped at one of the occupying groups.
Yes.
And you know the stupidity of it all is that one of the organizers of the event told her to share her tent with a man because there wasn't enough tents to be.
Well, they were doing their own. Thomas, your phone's breaking up.
Positions.
Are you on a mobile phone?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, because you were breaking up.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I got you now. Yeah.
Okay. I think that's the Google.
Are you calling and using Gmail?
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Unfortunately, it depends upon how the signals go on your website as you're doing this. It was ironic because they're doing their own spread the wealth. They're telling them, you have to share the tent with this person and you have to share it with that person. So consequently, something like this would end up happening. You know, the girl, there was no security there, you know, because forget about it. You know, they don't want security. They'll watch out for each other. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right.
And that's not what's happening. And I'm sure we're going to hear more and more reports of stuff like this happening after the full protest is over, because then people are going to come out of the woodwork and say, hey, listen, this happened to me here. And
right.
The good question is, where's the cops? The cops are on the other side of the barriers, protecting the good people from the ones inside the barriers.
Exactly. And, you know, that thing of it all is at the end of the day, it'll still be George Bush's fault.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Matter of fact, there's a story that came out today that Steve Jobs last year approached President Obama in a meeting and told him, unless you become more business friendly, you're going to be a one-term president. How do you like that one?
Steve Jobs told Obama that?
Yep. Yep.
Wow. I wonder if Steve Jobs was a closet conservative.
I don't know. But according to this article that was reported in the Huffington Post, he also suggested Obama convene with CEOs, but became irritated when the White House added too many people to the guest list, threatening that he had no intention of coming. So even when they did make a meeting with the CEOs to see how they can be more business friendly, he didn't want to meet with them.
Who, Steve Jobs didn't or Obama didn't?
No, Obama. Obama.
So Obama didn't want to meet with CEOs even though he made the meeting, or did Steve Jobs set up the meeting?
Well, I'm trying to see. This was some sort of a dinner. They met in the fall of 2012, which contained a copy. So it looks like Jobs gave Obama a copy of his book. Jobs told Obama he had to adopt more business-friendly policies, saying companies were more likely to build factories in China because of regulations and unnecessary costs in the United States. The meeting was at the Westin San Francisco Airport. He wanted to receive a personal invitation from the president, but he ultimately gave in for maintaining his demand for 5 days. I don't know what that means. But it looked like he was looking for a personal face-to-face, and that's when he said this stuff to Obama. Huh, interesting. Very, very interesting. Well, you're listening here to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. Our call-in line is open. I welcome you to call in. It's 917-889-3675. And the chat room has been going pretty nicely. Mr. Magic has posted up a link for ForbiddenKnowledgeTV.com to do with computer-rigged elections. And that's going to be a big thing now, Thomas, because now this year, we're going to have more and more computerized voting, and it's going to be interesting to see how they're going to maintain the integrity of it. What's your take on these new fangled machines?
Well, you have to investigate the companies that built them. If they're liberal leaning, you can. Something's going to happen.
I like the way you think. But there has to be some.
I'm just being real.
Yeah, there has to be some sort of a fail-safe to these machines, and security-wise, you know, making sure that they are hacker-proof. I mean, nothing is 100% hacker-proof. But I'd like to see them have some sort of security, whether or not it's through a financial bond or, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know anything about these machines. I have a hard time with my own computer at home than trying to figure out how they would make it more secure. But there has to be a way to do that to prevent fraud, you know.
Right. It's kind of like how Harry Reid was down 7 points to Sharon Angle and ended up winning by 4 or 5 percentage points in the last hour or so.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was also that scandal out in the Midwest. What was it? I forget which state it was, where they said he wasn't even legally on the ballot. The signatures were forged. It was not properly applied when Obama ran for election. I forget what the
was
state
that,
was.
Was that actually Missouri?
I think it might have been. I'm not sure.
I think it was in St. Louis, actually, the other end of the state.
Oh, well, what are you guys doing out there in the Midwest?
Well, you gotta remember we have a Democratic governor. We have one from the 5th district here in Missouri. We have one of the most corrupt congressmen. I don't like liar and now I think he's the president of the CBC.
Well,
he was, you know that he was the one that claimed that Saudi N-word, right?
Well, Thomas, you're breaking up again. I couldn't quite
catch. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you now, but you were breaking up badly there. All right, we're down to our last 10 minutes or so here on Southern Sense. And I want to mention two things that are going on overseas. One, Gaddafi's gone. Gaddafi's dead. Last I saw in the news, his body is lying in a commercial freezer in a shopping center. And supposedly, according to Islamic law, he has to be buried today. Where they're going to bury him and how they're going to do this, it's going to be interesting. I'd like to know how they're going to handle this because they don't want to make him a martyr. That's one thing they don't want.
Right.
And also, the UN human rights arm of it is threatening to do an investigation into his death, saying it was cruel and unusual. The guy went down fighting. What I'm hearing is that he was still alive when they put him in the car, and they started driving him around trying to figure out what to do with him, and someone riding in that car shot him point-blank, execution style. So I think this is what the UN is upset over. Well, you know, it saves the cost of a trial, right?
Well, yeah, but at the same time.
Well, I guess they did it the trial right then and there. But it's going to be interesting to see how they're going to handle his burial. Because, like I said, they don't want a martyr. If he had gone to trial, can you imagine what would have happened? He would have had all the supporters there in the courtroom. He would go into a huge tirade, and he would use it as a platform.
But did you comment?
Oh, I'm sorry, Thomas, I lost you again. But this is what would have happened, actually, if he had gone to trial. It would be a huge international scene. He would use it as an international stage, and he would try to use it as a way to come back into power, saying, hey, listen, you know, these are just thugs, blah, blah, blah. It was American puppets. And you can imagine the type of tirade he would go on. And he would probably go on for 3 hours before the judge, jury, or whatever it would be, and he would probably do it publicly on camera. And it would be his excuse to try, again, to regain control and power. And how can you guarantee what the courtroom is going to be packed with? You know, it could have been packed with his all of his supporters, and then he walks away free. So in a way, it is a blessing that it was handled the way it was handled. Mr. Magic is saying that he was probably dumped in the ocean. I don't know, but we'll have to wait and see. What's that, Thomas? Okay, Thomas dropped off.
Can you hear me now?
Hello? Thomas, you're breaking up really badly, very badly.
Okay.
All right. For this, because Mike hasn't called back in, but this is a commercial he had done for my show. I am probably the only radio show here on Blog Talk Radio that has a Playboy Bunny segment. A little bit of an ad pushing my program from the Playboy Bunnies. As I'm closing down, I wanted to mention a couple of things that are going on. And this struck my eye because I know a lot of you out there have kids. There's a Halloween hazard that's going out there, and optometrists are warning people not to do this. Buying over-the-counter contact lenses. There's these designer lenses to change your eyes, different colors, to make them look like dolls, to make them look like zombies or whatever. And they're saying if unless you have a prescription for contact lenses that are then produced and given to you or sold to you by an optometrist, do not buy these costume items. If you go to a costume store or to your local store, wherever you're buying your costumes from, and you see these things over-the-counter, to make your eyes different, they're saying do not buy them, do not put them in. It will cause damage to your cornea, possible ulcers to the cornea, possible infection, scratching the cornea. It may lead to loss of vision and possible blindness. So please, if you're going to be, Halloween's coming up right around the corner. It's just a short step away, just 10 days away. If you're going to go out and buy these costumes and have your kids wear them, please do not use these contact lenses. They're saying any sort of eye contact that you're going to do has to come from a certified eye doctor. So please don't use these over-the-counter contact lenses. Any contact lens you put in your eye needs the same level of care. It has to be cleaned properly. It has to be fitted properly. The over-the-counter ones, the one-size-fit-all, is not going to work. You know, some people have little defects in their eyes. So if you want to do a Halloween costume and you want to have these special contact lenses, go to an optometrist, have yourself fitted for them properly. If you use these over-the-counter ones, if they're not cleaned properly, if they're not manufactured properly, again, it can damage your eye, damage your cornea, and possibly cause blindness. One thing I want to mention locally, and I don't know if your communities are doing that, we have a recycling program here for electronics. You cannot take them to the dump and just dump them. It has to be done specifically at certain places. So here in Buford, on November 5th, they're going to have two of them, north of the Broad and south of the Broad. Find out more about it. Call 843-255-2734. Now, those of you that have been following my show probably got a weird email from me yesterday, and I have to admit I blew my stack. And people don't realize that I'm a very easygoing person, but when you push my buttons and you push them the wrong way, I am going to explode, and what happens next means you're going to be very sorry. Someone made a comment on their show about me, slandered me, and called me names, and then told people to not tune into this show. Allegedly because something was placed inside the chat room. Now, what this individual did not know is immediately after the show, I printed out a copy of the chat room. My show was on Tuesday. The following day, he did his show. I went back to the chat room printout and double-checked it, went through it line by line, and found the allegation completely unsubstantiated, completely unfounded. I contacted the individual and asked him to call me directly so we can settle the matter. I then went back and re-listened to the show because I wanted to make sure what I was saying was 100% correct. And the more I listened to it, I was so angry, I was visibly shaking. That's how angry I was. I waited for the individual to contact me. I waited for the individual to apologize or retract. He has not. I then contacted Blog Talk Radio. It is now in their hands. Whatever action they take against this person will be their disciplinary action. If action is not taken, then I will seek legal redress. So just a little FYI, if you saw a weird email in there, I'm not going to name the host. I do not slander other hosts. I will not talk bad about anyone else. But this is now between that individual and BTR and myself. And I was expecting him to call in today, and I'm surprised he did not. But we'll wait and see. It's only been 48 hours. I'll let Blog Talk Radio handle the situation, and just, you know, I'm sure they will handle it properly. You know, I'm a Premium Plus member, and I don't think they want to lose my business or my listening audience. So I really want to thank everyone for their support, and I want to thank you for joining us on the show today. And in the interim, let's get a little Bob Hope in here about Democrats and zombies.
Yes? Oh, come in, Larry. This is Mr. Montgomery. I met him a few weeks ago in New York.
Oh, how are you? You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
A what?
Well, Prada just told me about a caretaker on Black Island. A Negro woman lives in a little shack with a zombie son.
Yes, that's more voodooism, and not very pleasant. When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
How horrible.
It's worse than horrible, because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes, walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
I love that clip. I really, really do love that clip. And I'm going to close out now with a song by Don Fortney, and it's called Can You Hear Us Now? And this is out there, and this is going to dedicate this one to Mr. Craig Miller. This should be his campaign song, because they're going to hear him in D.C., I hope, very soon. So, little Don Fortney, can you hear us now?
Great state of Alaska to the hills of Caroline, from New England to the Florida Keys, we woke up just in time. There are folks up here from Texas who have fought hard to be free. Congress, take some of our money, but don't you touch our liberty. Can you hear us? Us now, sounding the alarm. Can you hear us now? Our heartbeat is our drumming. Can you hear us now? Marching our arm. Now there's something wrong in Washington. Yes, there's evil in the air. Stop the halls of Congress, and some folks, they just don't care. Why we need a new beginning with no Republicans or Democrats. Yes. Clean out all the vermin and then kick out all the rats. Can you hear us now? Oh, yes, we're coming. Can you hear us?
Can you hear us now? Oh, yes, we're coming.
heart.